Northwest of Normal is a true crime podcast. The subject matter may not be suitable for all listeners and is not meant for children. Discretion is advised.
Welcome to Northwest of Normal, a true crime podcast exploring stories from the Pacific Northwest. I'm Megan, and my husband John is with me to hold space for the terror and anxiety that can sometimes come with being a woman.
I'm here for that.
We're going back to serial killer territory. I wouldn't say that I've wanted to cover this, but for whatever reason, I was restless when looking for the next story to tell you and couldn't decide. When I came across this story, I got purchase. I've heard a few other people cover it, but I wasn't able to grok it, so I thought I'd try my hand. Today, I'm going to tell you about what has been known variously as the Long Tom River Murders and a man whom they called the Lust Killer and the Shoe Fetish Slayer, Jerry Brudos.
I'm interested. I've never heard of this guy.
You may have noticed that whenever I cover a serial killer, I don't couch it in mystery. We're just going to say up top that this is a terrible story and it does not end well, but I guess that might be why we're all here. I want to delve into the psychological and cultural implications of this because it's a real humdinger. Beware, this is not one for the faint of heart.
I believe you.
Jerome Henry Brudos was born on January 31st, 1939, in Webster, South Dakota, to Henry and Marie Brudos. He had an older brother named Larry, and unfortunately for Jerry, Marie, his mother, wanted her second child to be a girl, and she wasn't shy about letting Jerry know it. Marie emotionally abused Jerry and disparaged him, making it all the worse, juxtaposed with the way she adored and praised his older brother, Larry.
Like, what did she do? Like, dress him up in girls' clothes and stuff?
No, which is really weird that you say that because of where this is going to go. But she was a monster to him. And we're going to get to that in a second. There was only room for one golden boy, and Jerry was supposed to be a girl. So we're not off to a great start.
Right.
We could bear in mind that Jerry grew up in the 1940s and his crimes ramped up in the 1960s. So any reflection on Marie comes through the lens of previous cultural eras when terms like refrigerator mother were still in vogue. She may well have been a momster.
A momster.
M-O-M-S-T-E-R. But I'm just saying we need to check ourselves a little bit before we buy into outdated narratives.
Sure.
I think Marie had problems and was problematic.
Okay, fair.
And yet, you know that I don't like to pile on moms.
No, but all of this, the psychology is the interesting part to me. And all of this comes from somewhere. I don't believe people are born serial killers.
Henry, Jerry's father, was irritable, but not necessarily abusive toward the boys. Marie ruled the roost and was a harsh disciplinarian, at least with Jerry. It didn't help that she was puritanical and uptight. Again, I'm not telling Marie to smile or loosen up. I'm giving you what I read. She raised Larry and Jerry while Henry worked seasonal jobs.
Okay.
Because Jerry needed a mother's love and wasn't getting that from Marie, he became close with a woman around her age who lived in their neighborhood. She was kind and affectionate to Jerry when he came around, and in later years, Jerry said he had wished that this neighbor were his actual mom. When this woman developed health issues, she told Jerry that he couldn't come over anymore.
Well, that's kind of weird.
This is rough, especially considering that around this time in Jerry's childhood, a girl that he'd been friends with died of tuberculosis.
Ouch.
Yeah. You could say he lost the only thing he knew of as a maternal figure and the closest relationship he had to what could be a sister in a short span of time, leaving him bereft and, in my psychoanalysis, terrified that any close ties to a female would end in devastating loss.
Yeah.
But I am not a licensed therapist, and it's just armchair hullabaloo on my part.
That's okay. That's why we're here, Megan.
The Brudos family moved often so that Henry could find seasonal work. They went west from South Dakota and lived in different places throughout the Pacific Northwest before setting down roots on farmland in Salem, the capital city of Oregon.
Okay.
Per Wikipedia, Jerry was, quote, an unremarkable and sickly child.
Ooh.
Unremarkable.
Like, who was it on Wikipedia that decided that?
I don't think it was the Wikipedia contributor. I think it was what they read from multiple sources and accounts.
Multiple sources deemed him unremarkable.
Well, it's like, couldn't that be the defining word for so many serial killers?
Or he's so many people in general, like.
Just a dude. Just your average Joe.
Okay.
Right? Wasn't that a thing about Robert Lee Yates?
Well, I feel like it's a trope.
He was notable for being unremarkable. Like, what's the word? Just wallpaper.
Sure.
I mean, that's a trope for serial killers, and it's also a trope for people who are spies and CIA or whatever. They need to be unnoticeable or no. Unremarkable is the perfect.
They don't draw attention to themselves. No. Yeah.
He didn't have green hair and muscles.
Yeah. He didn't have a nose piercing and tattoos on his face. When Jerry was a child, he got migraines and sore throats. And I wonder how much of these were psychosomatic manifestations of his shit relationship with his mom.
Oh, yeah. He needed attention, right?
100%.
Yeah.
If Jerry didn't already massively resent older brother Larry for their mother's favoritism toward him, I bet Jerry really appreciated that Larry excelled socially and academically while Jerry floundered. Just like Robert Lee Yates, who I mentioned a minute ago, Jerry made virtually no impression on most people throughout his youth and into his teen years.
Sure.
This is the part of the story where I wish I could tell you that Jerry overcame childhood struggles to become a world-renowned artist or a CEO of a Fortune 500 company. But this is not that podcast.
No.
I don't know how we know some of the information that I'm about to impart, but I assume most of it comes from Jerry himself in interviews after he was caught.
Okay.
You don't know what he did yet.
No.
And I'm letting the cat out of the bag that he did some shit and he does get caught.
Okay, so this is a solved.
Yes. As an adult, looking back on his childhood, Jerry believes he developed a foot fetish and shoe fetish as early as age 5, when he recounted a singular moment. A family friend's teenage daughter didn't feel well while at their house, and they had her lie down on Jerry's bed. He was fascinated by the high heels that she wore. When he tried to take them off her feet, she woke up and told him to get away. I'm not here to moralize about fetishes. As far as I'm concerned, you do you as an adult with consenting adults. I'm not going to pretend that people don't have fetishes, and I'm not going to pretend that culturally in the U.S., we know how to handle that with maturity or open-mindedness. I'm just telling you a story, and this is part of the story.
A historic side note. So I think that foot fetishes are way more common than we or I ever thought they were. And then you can think about ancient Japan having the most widespread foot fetish with binding of the feet as a, like,
literally pretty breaking the bones of women's feet.
But it was common. It was common. Yeah. And because they were obsessed with tiny feet, like, as weird as we seem to think it is today, or I do, I don't know, whatever, it was pretty widespread culturally.
Common doesn't mean healthy or okay. And
fair.
Regardless of how common or widespread it is, if you can find ways to satisfy yourself with whatever fetish you might have, foot or otherwise, great. It only becomes problematic if you rope in unsuspecting or unwilling, non-consenting people.
Yes, but I'm going to tell a little story about our home, my hometown. There was a guy there that I knew multiple women who had met this fella. He had proposed to them to spend an hour or so in a hotel room, laying on the bed in the hotel room with their feet dangling over while he was at the base of the bed doing whatever they couldn't see. he would give them jewelry in exchange for that hour. He had multiple young women take him up on this. It was weird, but nobody knows. Nobody saw what he did at the bottom of the bed. So I guess that makes it okay, but still weird.
He didn't hurt the women.
He didn't hurt the women. Fair.
And they were willing participants.
Yep.
That, to me, goes under the umbrella of safe and consenting.
Yes.
So different.
Underage, but whatever.
Yeah, that's where we start to get into not great territory.
No, but I mean, I'm saying it's creepy and weird, but not illegal, I guess.
And
I don't know.
Criminal, per se.
Just weird.
It could be considered criminal
if
they're under 18 or 16 or whatever the age of consent was in Wyoming at that time.
Sure.
Okay, well, back to the story. At age 5, Jerry was playing in a junkyard, as you do in 1944, when he found a pair of leather high heels with rhinestones on them. When any child is 5, everything is a treasure. It's sparkly and fancy and special. Jerry finding these magical shoes in a dump and thinking that they're amazing at age 5 is no big thing. But it became a really big thing when he brought his bounty home and put the heels on to show them off to Marie, his mom, who freaked the fuck out, told Jerry he was wicked, and told him to take the shoes back to the garbage pile.
Okay, I'm kind of surprised that she didn't encourage this in him, knowing that she wanted a little girl. Like, anyways...
I'm thinking of Frances McDormand's character from Raising Arizona when she's like, you take that diaper off your head and put it back on your sister. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You take those filthy, fancy rhinestone high heels and put them back in the dump where you found them. You know?
Like, right.
Okay. Marie's reaction is going to make an impression on a young child.
Yeah.
Right? A young child being Jerry in this scenario. Worse, Jerry snuck back to the junkyard to get the high heels after he took them back at Marie's direction. He gets them back and then wears them in secrecy. Marie catches him wearing them and she beats Jerry before forcing him to watch her burn the rhinestone fancy high heels.
Okay. Yeah. So core memory formed and shame and obligatory like hatred of that control is right inside that core memory.
And physical abuse.
Yeah.
Powerlessness. When he was 7, Jerry tried to steal his first grade teacher's high heels. When adults questioned him, he said he didn't know why he did it. It's the mid-1940s and grown-ups are demanding answers from a 7-year-old regarding his behavior. My, how times have changed. I mean, I think we do ask children more now, you know, where are you coming from? What's going on? But can you imagine in the 1940s, like, hey, 7-year-old, why are you doing what you're doing? They don't fucking know. And they don't have the words or ability to
even explain it. Yeah.
So we've got neural pathways forming intense grooves into Jerry's impressionable young mind. He's learning that traditionally feminine objects are talismans of the wicked and shameful. And this is all before his lady neighbor tells him they can't hang out anymore and he loses that female friend to tuberculosis. By the time he reaches puberty, Jerry doesn't know the mechanics of sexual intercourse. Saying that, I all of a sudden feel like a 5th grade teacher circa 1978 using awkward terms to awkwardly describe awkward human acts to a bunch of awkward kids.
Yeah.
It's the Catholic in me. Sex is dirty, wrong, and bad unless you're married and procreating.
Of course.
Jerry was naive to the ways of sex. Around age 14, he began masturbating, but rarely to conclusion. I don't know how else to put that. He often had nocturnal emissions, and when he did, Marie, his mom, shamed him and made him wash his own bed sheets.
Of course she did.
Let's say that teenage Jerry wasn't a flirt. He was interested in girls, but he had acne and felt self-conscious about his height. I don't know if he felt too tall or too short. Like, as a grown man, he was like 6 feet tall. So I don't know which way that went for him as a kid.
Yeah. However you are as a teenager, you feel awkward.
Of course. Part of me wants to ask who among us during puberty, and yet this came on the heels of an itinerant childhood with a mom who treated him like shit and outright degraded him and made him feel like almost everything was sorted. Or even worse, everything that he did was sorted.
Right.
During his nascent adulthood, Jerry adds to his fetishes by getting into women's lingerie, helped along by a neighbor boy with older sisters who lets him touch and smell their underwear.
Okay.
We'll learn what path this paved for Jerry, but who is this neighbor kid who's like, you want to come over and paw at my sister's undergarments? Do you know what I mean? Like, who the fuck is that guy? Jerry, we know, is a psychopath. But when there's like a neighborhood kid who's like, hey, come smell my sister's underwear. Fucking who? What?
No, but we don't know he's a psychopath yet. He's a little boy who's interested in ladies' stuff.
He's not a little boy anymore. He's an early teen.
Well, okay. I still consider that a young
child. Sure. Barely a man. But who's the neighbor dude? Can you humor me?
Yeah, sure. That doesn't surprise me. What surprises me is that anyone would be so bold as to be like, hey, can I sniff your sister's panties? And then the other boy would be like, sure, go ahead. Come over anytime you want to sniff some panties.
If this is the thing, Jerry, I don't think, initiated it. Or maybe he mentioned something offhandedly. And then this other kid is like, I've got a bunch of sisters. Come smell their stuff. And it's like, you have sisters. Would it have ever occur to you to bring a friend home to be like, go ahead and ransack my sister's underwear drawer?
No, but also I would be like, what are you doing? Get out of my family laundry.
Thank
like,
you.
What are you doing?
All of it is weird. And I just say, fuck all the boys will be boys rhetoric. This is abnormal behavior. And yet, look at any 80s movie for proof that for several decades, it was no big deal and even funny to be a stalker, molester who copped cheap feels, or invader into any girl or young woman's bedroom to have a look and touch at her intimate possessions.
I haven't seen enough 80s movies, apparently.
You've never seen 16 Candles?
No, I have.
Okay, well, whatever. But do you remember the scene when Anthony Michael Hall's character purloins a pair of girls' underwear to hold up for a group of mouth-breathing nerd boys who paid money to get into the boys' bathroom to see this pair of girls' underwear?
No, I don't remember that.
It's
been a while.
Ridiculous. Okay, so whatever, this leads to Jerry stealing underwear from female neighbors anytime he gets a chance. Meaning, I think that he took underwear from these girls, the friend's sisters, and then also just sort of like snuck into a home, or if he was over at a neighbor's house, he'd be like, well, I'm going to find my way upstairs into the primary bedroom and steal Mrs. Anderson's negligee or underwear or whatever he could find.
So he's a burgeoning collector.
100%. Yeah. This oddly reminds me of a more modern equivalent. Stories I've heard of people with opioid use disorder stealing pills from friends and family members' medicine cabinets.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's an addiction.
Yeah.
It's a compulsion.
Yeah.
Jerry graduates to wearing the contraband that he steals. This makes me wonder, did he want to be close to women or a woman? Or did he want to be a woman? Both? Neither? I don't know. I just wish that he'd found a way to work it out so that he could have met his needs in a healthy and life-giving way.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Take your fetish, take your compulsion, take your passion, whatever you want to call it. You know I hate the word fantasy, but whatever it is, great. Take the energy that you galvanize automatically and direct it somewhere that will benefit you and other people instead of taking away from you and other people.
Yeah.
That's the idealist in me. Instead, he started stalking women and taking pictures of them without their knowledge. He stole their shoes and underwear. This begins around the time that Marie started shaming him for having a body at all. According to Jerry himself, by his mid-teens, he started having fantasies about possessing women.
Okay.
When he was 16, he dug a tunnel close to his house. By this time, the Brudos family is living on farmland. He created a cave at the end of the tunnel that he dug and spends time there, imagining bringing a girl or many girls into his underground hideout. But he doesn't have romance on the mind. Any girl or woman he would bring into this hole would be his captive.
Interesting.
During this same year, Jerry brought a girl home with him under false pretenses. When he got her up to his bedroom, he left for a minute, and when he came back, he wore a mask and held a knife out toward her. He demanded that she take her clothes off. She did, and Jerry took pictures of her. Then he left the room and came back a few minutes later without the mask and told this girl that the quote-unquote intruder had locked him, Jerry, into the barn on the property and subdued him with a knife. This is so fucked up. Jerry made this girl think that a third party had forced her to disrobe. He took pictures of her and then had also threatened him, right? So he's pretending.
How did that go over? Oh, and he also took my pants and my shoes and my shirt.
He gets this girl into his bedroom. He puts on a mask and threatens her and makes her do these things. And then he comes back.
How old was he?
14, 15.
Idiot.
So who was this girl? And did she know that it was Jerry the whole time?
Of course she did.
I imagine girls like her. I have been her. I have been this girl where creepy men have done weird ass shit with me and to me. She must have been terrified.
Yeah.
But did she keep this experience to herself, or did she tell her friends, don't ever hang out with Jerry Brudos, he's a creep?
I'm sure she did.
I hope so. For all the good that it does. Thus began a theme for Jerry. Abduct girls his age or younger at knife point, take them into the barn and force them to strip so he can take pictures of them. He would lock them up and leave, returning a few minutes later, wearing different clothes and restyling his hair. He would then rescue, in quotes, the girl and say that he was Jerry's twin brother, Ed, and act appalled by his brother Jerry's behavior. He would ask the girls if they were okay and then guilt them into silence by saying that Jerry was working through some issues in therapy and that if they implicated him, it would delay Jerry's progress.
Interesting form of manipulation.
Elaborate.
Elaborate. And also, like, can't believe that that worked.
I don't think, like, it did. I think, like, these girls were in such shock that they were like, whatever, can I get the fuck out of here now?
Right.
Ed, the fake twin brother, it's Jerry pretending to be Ed, would also promise to destroy the camera film, which is a weird touch because it's like, these girls probably didn't care that much about being photographed. They probably cared more about being imprisoned.
Yeah.
Talk about the ultimate in gaslighting. We will never know if these girls, who are now women and way grown women, this was in the 50s and 60s, who knows if they believed him? I mean, they were likely so ready to get the fuck away from him and were so rattled and traumatized that they were like, yep, no problem, Ed. I won't say a word. Can I leave now?
Yeah.
Can I get out of here? There's a line in the Wikipedia article on this wherein the contributor or contributors wrote, quote, none of these girls were subjected to physical sexual assaults beyond tentative fondling, and all apparently agreed, as none are known to have informed authorities of these experiences, end quote. I have so many problems with this.
Yeah.
A, tentative fondling is not acceptable. B, we have no idea whether Jerry sexually assaulted these girls. Part two to this, I don't appreciate the passivity of verbiage like, were subjected to physical sexual assaults. They weren't subjected to shit. Jerry perpetrated against them.
Sure.
C, they all apparently agreed because they wanted to get away from Jerry/Ed as quickly as possible. And D, these girls didn't inform authorities because they were terrified and knew that no one would believe them or give a shit or do anything about it if they did report it.
Yeah.
In 1956, when he's 17, Jerry asks a girl out on a date. She agrees. She's also 17. Let's name her Anne. Jerry picks Anne up for their date and drives her out to a desolate road. He pulls over and demands that Anne take her clothes off. When she doesn't comply, Jerry forces Anne from the car, beats her, and breaks Anne's nose.
Wow.
Another couple driving by during Jerry's attack hear Anne's screams, and they pull over to see what's going on. Initially, Jerry says not to worry. His gal fell out of the car. But probably seeing the dubious look on the couple's faces, he changes his story and says that, quote unquote, some weirdo had attacked Anne before he, hero Jerry, stepped in to save her and banished the bad guy.
Did they get anything from Anne on this? Like,
well, the couple was having none of Jerry's cock and bull story.
Yeah.
They drove Anne and Jerry to a local police station. Once there, Jerry confessed to beating Anne up, but told officers that he had only done so because he wanted her to get naked so he could take pictures of her.
Oh, okay, Jerry. No problem. Well, have a good night.
Gee, sure, Jerry.
You psychopath.
We get it. We're men. You didn't have to beat her and break her nose, but when you let us know that she refused to take her clothes off so that you could photograph her, well, now
right.
You've got a case
right.
Against her.
Oh, she wouldn't comply, Jerry? We get it. We're police officers.
Jerry was awfully sorry and all that. He was a good guy with no record, and his temper must have run away with him. You know, like breaking a girl's nose. But thank God, 1956 police charged him with assault and battery against Anne. I was really gratified to hear that.
Yeah.
Surprise. Jerry has done atrocious things already, but until now, he's not on record. Officers are so not cool with his attack on Anne that they do a search of his bedroom. They find all manner of women's undergarments and Polaroid pictures of several girls, one of whom they recognize. When police reach out to her, she shares her experience from the previous year when Jerry accosted her before his twin brother Ed swooped in to save the day and make it all okay.
This is when everyone finds out that he doesn't have a twin brother.
Don't even know. There might be a couple of women still out there living in Oregon who literally think that twin brother Ed saved them from Jerry.
Crazy.
Law enforcement thought that all of this stank. They sent Jerry to Salem, Oregon's version of juvenile detention at the time. From there, he was directed to get psych evaluations from doctors at the Oregon State Hospital. He was admitted there and stayed for the next 9 months, but was allowed to leave during the day to keep going to high school.
I can't believe we're still in high school.
I can't believe that they had the presence of mind to admit him to a psychiatric hospital.
I would hope so.
I feel like teenage boys can do super fucked up stuff today. And everyone's like, meh.
This is egregious. I mean,
think about Randy Woodfield. Over and over and over again, stalking girls, exposing himself to girls, doing really inappropriate shit, but he was a football player.
Right.
Jerry was a football player.
There you go.
Jerry was a football player.
There you go.
They would not have even, they would have been like, he didn't do anything wrong.
Yes.
But Jerry's like a meek pipsqueak. And they're like, okay, you're scary. If he were a football player or a fucking sports ball dude or anything masculine, they would have been like, oh, yeah, he's behaving how he should.
Yeah.
Right? Kind of.
I think you're on to something.
A psychiatrist deemed Jerry depressed and said he showed signs of schizotypal personality disorder. Without getting too boxy and granular, this basically means that doctors thought he displayed disordered thinking, social anxiety, paranoia, and derealization, among other traits.
What is derealization?
I don't know. I've looked it up many times, which probably says too much about me. It's just like the feeling that things aren't real or that you're not in touch with reality. I see it as like being dissociative.
Nowadays, I hear kids on the internet discuss people as NPCs. And that bugs the shit out of me because that is a non-player character and it comes from video games. And they're like, that person is an NPC. Like, they can't think for themselves. They're just robots and they don't deserve any respect. And I hate that term because of what it denotes in the person who says it is like, I don't respect them because I don't think they're a real person.
Mm.
It's weird.
Yeah, it is weird. And it's also where we are now.
Yeah.
A quick note on diagnoses, right? Like the ones I just sort of laid out. When I think someone is a jerk or not very nice, I will diagnose them in my mind as paranoid or narcissistic or otherwise generally riddled with issues. Then I'll read about these conditions to confirm my suspicions and realize that a lot of the criteria I'm reading about could apply to me. Do you know what I mean?
Barely.
Where you're like, they're a narcissist. And then you're like, wait, what? What's a narcissist? And then you go to the Google box and then you're like, oh, well, some of the things on this list, like, I mean, I exhibit that behavior sometimes.
Sure. You know but I mean? It's the same thing with WebMD when you look up anything.
Yeah.
You're like, wait, you're like, oh, wait a second. I have cramps in my legs and
tricholicodosis or whatever the thing is. Yeah, sure. Like I have that kind of cancer.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Physically and psychologically, yes, I have all the things, which, what is that? What's hypochondria but for the psyche or the mind?
I don't know.
Or what's spiritual hypochondria?
I wish I had something good to make up about that, but I don't.
Well, consider me diagnosed. Anyway, okay. Oh, I think I'm laughing a lot because this story is so fucking dark. But this story is not about me. Okay, it's about Jerry and about some women that we're going to learn about. Doctors didn't think there was anything majorly off about him, and they didn't think he was delusional, right? Like, they note these characteristics in him, but they're like, I think that their conclusion was he's not a danger per se. They decided that his sexual fantasies had to do mainly with a hatred for his mother and women as a concept. I get it.
Women as a concept. Well, like,
that's me putting it that way. But I get a weird sense that all these white male doctors were like, Jerry hates women. No problem here. Doesn't everyone hate women? And if they don't already, shouldn't they start?
I don't know about that.
I
don't think that's intended.
I think the white male doctors were like, the white heteronormative male doctors were like, well, I'm noticing that he seems to have a hatred for girls and women and all things female and feminine. Check, check, and check. I mean, is there something so wrong with that?
I don't think he had that at all. I think he had a desire to possess those things. And
those things? You mean those human beings?
Own those things. No, you're talking about traits. So the shoes, the pictures, he is wanting ephemera. He is wanting a collection. He doesn't want the people that are involved. He wants the pictures.
Not yet.
Like, so he is fetishizing and he is collecting.
Okay. After less than a year, the hospital released Jerry and he went back home to live with his parents. By this time, they had moved from Salem to Corvallis, Oregon, a 45-minute drive south. Jerry graduated from Corvallis High School in 1957. And 2 years later, he joined the military and became a communications technician.
Oh, God.
Why do you say, oh, God?
Because he joined the military. It's like, well, we're going to need to teach this person how to kill.
How to channel his propensity to want to kill.
Yeah.
Into a way that will benefit the United States government.
But he was in communications. That's interesting, too. Well,
don't worry. I'll tell you why in a minute. The men he worked with later said that Jerry bragged about having sex with a woman who visited him in his bed each night. I'm sure they were all like, okay, Jerry, first of all, we don't care about your sex life. We don't have a horse in that race. Second, we don't really believe you anyway. Jerry's army career didn't last long. Within months, he was discharged for being psychologically unfit for duty. He moved back in with Ma and Pa in Corvallis. He got a job as an electrical engineer for a radio station and got licensed as a broadcast technician.
Okay. Okay, wait. I don't think that the Army keeps great records when somebody is released on, I can't remember what that is called, a psychological evaluation. You didn't find anything that gave you a deeper sense of what the army was saying.
Or what he'd done what to, he,
yeah, to get that discharge.
No.
Because the army does not like to do that.
Exactly.
They're usually like...
Pretty loose. I mean, it's a low bar,
well,
I think is what you're saying. I mean, I don't mean to say that to disparage anyone. I'm just saying...
I don't think it's a low bar. I think that somebody has to exhibit either suicidal tendencies or something worse, which would be something very
homicidal,
very strange for them to get that kind of discharge. So right. I just want to put a fine point on that.
I agree. And he had been in the army for months when they decided, hey, Jerry, I don't think this is for you.
Yeah. Strange.
But who knows? Maybe he was a squeaky wheel. Maybe he was like HR style or some shit. And they were like, yeah, you're high maintenance and we're not into it, you know? So his peers at the radio station thought that Jerry was interpersonally chill, right? Like they thought he was just sort of a normal dude. And they said he was good at his job, but they didn't get why he wasn't more ambitious or eager for career advancement, not living up to his full potential as maybe would be on a report card. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I've met people like that. I can be like that. I've met so many people who are like, hey, why are you doing this for work? Or what are you doing with your writing? Or why don't you be a rock star? And I'm just like, I don't know.
Jerry quiet quit the army.
Yeah. You know what I mean, though? Like, but I have a very strong sense that Jerry also was putting his energy into his foot fetish.
Sure.
He was like phoning in his job and they were like,
no, hey, I wonder literally if like some people caught him cross-dressing in the barracks and were like, Sarge, we got a problem here.
He thinks he's a lady or something.
I mean, he's not in the CIA. What does he think he's doing?
Right, right. So meanwhile, Marie, Jerry's mom, was still up to her old business of showering Larry, Jerry's older brother, with affection while leaving Jerry out in the cold. Jerry should have been a girl.
Yeah.
Even though Jerry lived with his parents full time, he had to sleep in a backyard shed when Larry came home from college to visit the family.
Oh, man.
This is really rough stuff. That has got to make you feel good, loved, and welcomed.
Yeah.
When you live in the house and they're like, well, your older brother's coming home. Get out to the backyard shed.
Yeah.
Sometime back in Salem in 1960, Jerry followed a woman to her apartment, strangled her until she passed out, and stole her shoes before leaving. Soon after, he tried to strangle another woman, but she fended him off before he got away with one of her high heels. He was never caught for either of these crimes, but he kept their shoes as mementos, and he slept with them.
Weird.
Not weird, once you get to know Jerry a little better. After he'd been at the radio station for a year, he took a teenage boy under his wing and taught him the basics of audio engineering. This boy visited Jerry at the station often and joked with Jerry about being shy around his female co-workers. Jerry joked back that this kid should find a girlfriend for him, and he did.
Okay, what?
This teenager took Jerry to the house of a 17-year-old girl named Ralphine Schwindler, whom the boy knew as a friend, or at least as an acquaintance.
Yeah.
And was like, oh, Jerry, you want a girlfriend? Meet Ralphine.
Okay.
Jerry and Ralphine struck up, and in September 1961, when Ralphine was 1 month pregnant, they got married.
Oh, shit.
You're not kidding. They moved to Portland, Oregon, not Maine, for several years. Ralphine gave birth to their daughter Teresa in 1962. While Jerry didn't physically or emotionally abuse Ralphine, he requested, and then I put in parentheses, required, forced, I don't know what word to use. He wanted Ralphine to do household chores while naked and in high heels.
Okay. Wait, how old was he at this time?
Okay, hold on.
I know that that's a
no, side. No, it's totally fine. But I'm glad you're asking. He was born in 1939, so he would have been like 22? 21, 22?
22, she's 17 or is she 18 at this time?
Well, by the time they get married and all of a sudden done, she's probably 18. Yeah.
Okay. Naked in high heels.
Here's the thing, too. I read all these things about, like, they were naked except for high heels. And I'm like, they were naked.
I mean.
I don't consider wearing shoes of any kind. If you're not wearing a shirt or underwear or pants or shorts or something covering your body, you're fucking naked. I don't care what's on your feet.
Yeah, but I mean, if this was just a request, that doesn't seem like a request that I would think is beyond the pale.
No.
I'm just saying.
We're getting there. I've
never requested this of you.
We all have different ideas of what is okay.
Yeah.
And hopefully you're with someone who you both feel okay about each other's requests or whatever you want to call it. He was basically like, Ralphine, get naked and put on some heels if you're going to sweep the kitchen, right?
Right.
If you're doing it anyway. He would take pictures of her, I think during housework, I don't know. He definitely took pictures of her before they had sex. We're right on time. The picture part of this isn't that weird to me. I'd just like to confirm that Ralphine wanted to clean the house naked, was cool with pictures before sex. Maybe she was fine with all of it. Maybe she rolled her eyes, but was like, anything for my wacky husband. Sure. Maybe she hated it. I don't know. And I don't know how to verify that with her.
Right.
Supposedly, Jerry abstained from aberrant and violent behavior during his years with Ralphine. But all things must end. And by the mid-1960s, when Teresa, their daughter, was a toddler and becoming more aware, Ralphine put her foot down about sexy time photos and naked house cleaning, not wanting to do it anymore.
Jerry, we have a toddler right over there.
Yes. Jerry, I'm not doing the weird-ass shit that we could get away with when she was a tiny baby. Jerry also had gained weight around this time, and this was a turnoff for Ralphine. She busied herself with motherhood and social outings with friends. Jerry tinkered around the house or on cars and electronics in the garage. A gulf widened between them, and Ralphine and Jerry stopped having sex regularly. Despite this, in May 1967, Ralphine had a son that they named Brian.
Okay.
Whom they named Brian. While she was in the hospital in labor with Brian, Jerry followed a woman who was wearing high heels to her home. After dark, he broke into her house, strangled her to unconsciousness, and raped her before absconding with her shoes. This is the night that his son is born.
Oh, fuck.
And he's escalating.
Wow.
He had stalked women, falsely imprisoned girls, and stolen shoes and lingerie. But up to this point, I don't think that he had raped anyone. I don't think he was ever charged with this crime.
Wow.
And I don't even know if the woman, she must have reported it. Because I don't think that he said it in later days. Like, I think that this woman must have reported it. And then we know in hindsight that that was Jerry. His family didn't stay in Portland. I read something about them living in a suburb of Salem for a spell. And I think that they might have lived in Corvallis, where Jerry's parents lived. I just want us to try to keep track of dates and locations, but I don't have a timeline of where he lived and when.
Okay.
And we'll kind of revisit this later.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things where I'm like, I need to be able to picture all this in time and space and geography.
But this is really when he starts to escalate. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay.
During this era, 1967, police arrested Jerry on the Oregon State University campus in Corvallis for stealing women's clothes from their dorm rooms. He was caught red-handed, wearing a girl's pair of capri pants, women's underwear, and a pair of high heels. There's no getting around his theft, as he's literally wearing contraband. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I didn't steal anything. It's like, I wasn't eating the chocolate cake and you have frosting all over your face. Like, all right. He's arrested, but I don't think they held him for long or took it very seriously, which is unfortunate for all, particularly the young women I'm about to tell you about. Jerry is about to cross the Rubicon. Buckle up, because this is next level dark territory. I think that we've talked about Jerry for long enough for right now that we need to divide this into two parts. So we're going to do that. Everybody, you don't have to wait. We're going to release both parts at the same time. Go ahead and click play on episode 25, and we'll catch you there.
See you then.